I want to give thanks to God who made me well again, according to the Danish cosmic conscious sage, Martinus. One of the astral planes is almost like a copy of the physical, although actually it is the opposite. This seems to apply to this plane that this book describes, and which is perhaps the same dimensional plane that is described in the book, film The Astral City. On the higher levels, everything in the environment is created directly with the power of thought, without delay. Footnote: with these words he left me, but hardly had he spoken than someone came up to him. In this world where I thought I was dreaming, there were many spirits I did not know. The one who was now approaching called out to him, "Listen, brother, wait. You called me." This made me curious, and I wanted to hear what was said. The stranger began, "You want to pray?" And pointing to me he continued, "You told him you wanted to thank God for restoring you to health and giving you your legs again." I heard the other one confirm that this was indeed the case. "Yes, I want to go on my knees and thank him. Take me to him and you can ask anything you like of me. I am willing to believe that there is a God of justice." The stranger answered, "If you want to pray, come with me." With that both of them went away, I don't know where. At any rate they did not enter the house. They went so quickly that I could not follow them, but from now on I decided to listen more carefully to the conversations around me. I even tried to meet others now while previously I had avoided any contact. Because I still firmly believed I was dreaming. The talk of others wearied me and I couldn't believe them. Now, though, I had become a little more careful in what I thought and listened whenever I could in order to find out with more certainty where I was. After a while I met someone who seemed to be talking to himself all the time, so I followed him for a bit. He would bend down, look at the ground, pick up some little stones or break off a blade of grass or a twig and examine everything very carefully. He would then turn a stone around in his hands for a long time and kiss it. He did the same with the twig. And in between he kept calling out, "Oh, I am so happy. I am so glad. Oh, I am so grateful." As he went on talking to himself like this, he kept on touching different things and looking at them most carefully. I went up to him and asked, "What are you talking about? What is it that is so new? Do you imagine that you are in a new world? As you can see there are stones here, too. And you can even find bushes and grass and anything you want to see. Have you not seen all these things on earth?" He looked at me with astonishment and said, "Who are you? How long have you been here?" I said, "I am not sure. Do you know I have the feeling everything here is simply a dream?" The other one answered, "Yes, I too have the feeling it might only be a dream." I nodded, "I am sure it is only a dream." But the other one did not mean that and asked, "Were you not in the war?" I replied, "No, I did not have to go to the war." Then he continued, "If you had been in the war you would not be talking like that. I lost my eyesight in the war, and after that nothing was the same. Blind, unable to work, my life became intolerable to me, and I longed for death. Now I have achieved that goal." He was laughing as he continued, "Now I can see again. My sight has been restored. This is something to rejoice about. Are you not glad?" "I told you," I replied, "I still have the feeling that everything here is only a dream." He looked at me in astonishment and said, "You must be very foolish if you have not realized that you have entered eternity." I saw it at once, even though I still have a long way to go because I did not believe in God when I was on earth. I confessed to him that I did not believe in God either. Suddenly I realized, I could see and I could walk, and I was able to work until I became ill, and life was not a hard battle for me. While others around me went hungry, I had an easy life. Now these two have found their faith, one because he has had his sight restored and the other because he can walk again. The one whose sight was restored continued, "Something must be wrong with you. Otherwise you would be able to believe." "Yes, he must be right," I thought, and aloud I said, "I think I must awake from my dream, though after all this I will also have a long way to go." Then I remembered the other one who wanted to learn to pray. Would I have to cry out as well, "Who will teach me to pray? I want to believe. Now I could see why the one who had been blind was so happy, and I understood his feelings as he turned a stone over and over to look at it, and how he felt so much pleasure in caressing a blade of grass or a twig. He could see again. Now I could understand that everything was beautiful to him, that a new world had opened up for him. The new world which had opened to him and which he could really see was still closed to me. I began to wonder whether it was not time for me to see as well. At last I was alone again, and he was about to enter the nearby house, the house which was also to be my home. I had come to hate staying there and having to listen to everyone's story, believing that everything was just a dream. Should I go in again? I was still hesitating, but was just about to enter when someone else came along, and I thought that he, too, was a newcomer to this strange world. I spoke to him and asked, "I suppose you are a stranger here, too?" He agreed and then said he can definitely remember seeing my dead body, and I was there when they carried me to the grave, so I must have died. I corrected him, "They only carried your body to the grave. You yourself are still alive, only now you are in a new world." "Funny," he repeated, "that's just it. I would not have thought that. Everything here looks just the same as it does on Earth." Then, turning to me, he said, "Do you know, I realize that I am now in a different world, and I accept that I deserve to be in a place where I feel like a stranger, knowing nobody, and where no one wants to be bothered with me. Nevertheless, I feel convinced that there must be other regions or countries in this universe that are more pleasant." "Yes, I think so, too," I agreed, whereupon he confessed to me, "Do you know if there really is a God and if he is going to call me to account? If so, I have nothing to hope for. I have so much on my conscience that I would like to crawl away with shame. I would rather it were not true that life goes on after death." Then I said, "As for me, I don't even know for how long I have been here. Until now everything has only been a long dream for me, but now I have awakened from my dream. I awoke from it the moment I began to take an interest in my neighbor and felt some involvement in his fate, and was prepared to listen to his point of view. Now you are giving me fresh confirmation that we are really living in a different world." My spirit brother repeated his worries, "If there is a God, and he is going to judge me, then I have nothing good to hope for. I wonder whether it would not be better for me to try and find somewhere to hide in this world. So far no one has bothered very much about me. True, in the beginning I saw some strangers around me, but they stood before me silently and had no time for me." "That's what happened to me at the beginning as well," I said. "I could see them, but they stood there silently. I felt as if I had suddenly arrived at a strange place where I had come for a holiday and where I had to look for accommodation and find my way around. That is what I thought it was like." But he was saying that his greatest wish was to crawl away. I drew his attention to the large house and added, "Come in with me. That's what I'm going to do. I feel braver now. I think that we shall find out more about this world in which we live. I am sure that if we listen to what the people say, we shall learn more." But he refused, saying, "I'm not looking for conversation. Other people only make me feel ashamed, because instead of believing in God, I did a lot of harm to my fellow men. I have so much on my conscience that I dare not tell you, and I am sure that I shall soon be punished for my misdeeds. I had better not go into that house. There are woods nearby where I shall be able to hide. I do not want to learn anything from anybody." Since he was convinced that he would be able to hide, I said, "Yes, try that. But if you do become bored, you can always come to see me. I shall be here." However, he was not really listening. He had turned round quickly and disappeared. I was not left alone after his departure. Instead, there was a great deal of activity around me. Lots of people were approaching the house, whilst others were leaving it. Of the latter, some looked sad and worried, while others were happy and glad. In this respect, things are much the same here as they are in human life. One lives together with people who are happy and cheerful, as well as those who are always unhappy, discontented and miserable. The spiritual world in which I had opened my eyes contains both kinds, too. Now I looked for those spiritual brothers and sisters who were also about to enter the house. I wanted to find someone pleasant. I was prepared to wait, for after all I had already taken a long time to decide to become more interested in this new life. Eventually someone came along who evidently also felt a stranger here. He looked around as if he was searching for something. I went up to him and asked, "Are you looking for someone?" He replied, "Yes, I am looking for someone who can show me the way. Where do you want to go?" I asked. "I know where I want to go, but I don't think I shall get there or be shown the way." I said, "Surely you know that you have died and that you are now living in the spiritual world? As far as human beings are concerned, you are now dead and they are no longer bothered about you." He replied, "Yes, I realize that life continues. As a human being, I did not believe in life after death." I laughed at those who spoke about the beyond, and I also laughed at those who believed in God and Christ and prayed to them. "Now here I am, and those whom I laughed at will not bother about me," he said sadly. "I did not want to have anything to do with them, so I hardly think they will welcome me." He confessed to me that his conscience was troubling him because of his unbelief, that he had encouraged others not to believe, and that he had been angry with those people who went to church. He had even punished children because they prayed. Now he said, "It is quite clear to me that God rules this world, and in view of all our misdeeds, neither of us can look forward to a comfortable life here. After all, what more do we deserve? I shall accept my fate with fortitude. I shall try to make amends as far as I can and defend myself. On my way here I have already thought of a number of excuses in my defense." So we agreed to enter the communal house. No sooner had we entered the first room where many spiritual brothers and sisters were engaged in conversation than someone, evidently of higher rank, approached, took me by the hand and said, "Wait a moment, you do not have to join this group, we have appointed a different room for you." Then a second spirit joined us and took my companion aside and said to him, "You cannot come in here now, you must first go into this room." So we were separated. The spirits who had separated us were obviously in charge of the spirits in that house. As far as L was concerned, I already suspected what was going to happen to me. I was led into an empty room which was not very large. My guide asked me to wait here and then left me alone. I had a strong desire to be out of this room again, because now I felt anxious and worried. However, I soon saw there was no escape, for a distinguished-looking spirit was already standing before me. I was struck by his severe expression. He began by saying that my dream had lasted a very long time indeed, but that now it had finally come to an end. I would have to account for everything that I had done wrong in my life and would have to make amends for those of my misdeeds that were sins in the sight of God. Then he began to tell about my life, stopping whenever he reached a point where I had done something wrong. All my former thoughts and ideas, in fact everything, was recalled to consciousness. I was deeply ashamed. My guilt was undeniable, there was no point in justifying myself. Apart from my lack of faith in God, I had also grievously offended against the spiritual laws. My whole life unfolded before my eyes. The spirit said it was impossible to speak of the punishment I deserved. I could never make amends for everything. God, however, was merciful and would remit part of my punishment. When he said this, I already began to feel a little bit better. He continued, "That shows you God's goodness. Even so, there is plenty for you to make good, and it will take you a long time. First we must instruct you in the spiritual laws. We want to tell you about the plan of salvation and redemption, and you are to learn more about God's creation. We shall explain as much to you as we think will be good for you, then you will be able to join the other brothers and sisters in the large room where all receive instruction together. As soon as that is completed, you will have to undergo your period of affliction and purification. You will be taken to the place where you will suffer the affliction you deserve, and you will find it very uncomfortable. That is where you will have to begin to reduce your burden of guilt, here in the spiritual world. Your faith in God must become more secure. However, you will be granted a comforter to be by your side and to pray with you. You will be able to change your attitude and, depending on your willingness to fulfill your tasks according to God's will, you will be able to make steady progress. That is how I had to undergo my period of purification, after which I came closer to God. The Divine Spirit who taught me to pray gave me the strength to believe, and in time faith in the rule of God took a deep hold on me. The angel who had taught me to pray said, "Although your faith has now become strong, it is by no means certain that you might not lose it again. If it does not take a firm hold of your spirit, it can wither away." This I could not quite understand, but the Divine Spirit continued, "Those spirits that stay here must eventually come to realize that they are under God's rule. They know that God sends His ministering angels to His children to smooth the way for them." He spoke of reincarnation and the tests that everyone would have to undergo. Only in a fresh life on earth could one prove whether or not one's faith had really become firmly rooted. I asked not to be sent back to life as a human being too soon. I wanted first to make sure that virtue and faith had taken root in my soul. I did everything I could to satisfy my spiritual teachers and guides. Thus I began my ascent from the stage of unbelief, until I reached the stage of belief I would like to retain, not only now in the spiritual world, but also in the fresh life that is facing me on earth. Slowly and steadily through God's goodness and mercy I made progress in the spiritual world. Slowly, by working hard for God's plan of salvation and by being willing to make amends, I ascended. I obey God's Holy Spirits and pray that my faith may remain firmly established. When I accompany people, I pray that their faith may be strengthened and that God's laws may become clear to them. In my view, those who truly believe are able to live lives that are well pleasing to God. I have been called upon to talk to you during this hour about my early experiences in the spiritual world so that you may learn from it. Think about what I have been saying. Now the time has come for me to leave you. Your spiritual brother and teacher, Joseph, sends you God's blessing. May He protect you in distress and danger. May He strengthen your faith in Him and in Christ the Redeemer. God bless you. Address by the Ascending Spirit Jacob, received on 7 July 1965 in German through Beatrice Brunner, Mathis, in the Service of Souls in Torment, Personal Report, 7 April 1965. God bless. My name is Mathis. There is nothing particularly noteworthy about my life on earth. I had a family of 9 children to support, and my parents lived with us as well. I was a stained glass maker and lived in Austria. We led a devout, Christian life. We always tried to lead a just life and to keep the commandments. We said our daily prayers together and never missed church service on Sundays. It was through my sense of duty and commitment to my family, along with the sacrifices I made for them, that I was able to enter the spiritual world with a certain measure of merit. I had always felt a strong desire to help others in distress, and my relatives also made a practice of doing this. It became a custom within our family to support those least well off, to help them out with a meal or by giving them bread or clothing of some sort. In short, we gave to others and offered them our help whenever and wherever we could. When I arrived here in the beyond, I was astonished at the reception I was given. My parents, who had returned to the spirit world a long time before, came to greet me and were overjoyed to see me. "Now you need never worry again about your daily bread," they told me. "But you can, if you wish, continue to help the poor." And my mother added, "There is always plenty of work for us to do here. We may lead blissful lives, but we still have to work happily, though our work is not as hard as it is on earth." I accepted these words of my mother and her companion. They seemed so pleased that I had arrived. As for myself, I felt really rather relieved. I had taken good care of my family, and those I had left behind gave every sign of being well looked after now. So there was no need for me to be anxious about my family or worry about how they were getting on, particularly since I, like those I had left behind, trusted steadfastly in God. A short while later my wife entered the spiritual world as well. We were allowed to stay together for a certain period, and we did not have to do any work at the beginning. That came later. After a certain time we had to take leave of one another. It was made very clear to us that in the spiritual world there is no standing still. Rather, it is up to each one of us here to make serious efforts to continue our ascent, and thus win for ourselves a beautiful place in God's world. All that is required is that we apply ourselves diligently and obediently, and do our very best to contribute to the realization of God's plan of salvation. We were told that there are many beings living in states of great wretchedness, and that many of those who arrive among us in the beyond are greatly distressed, unhappy and full of fear. For many, this new world comes as a great shock. They have been expecting something very different. And then there are also those who simply do not want to be here and who are unable to come to terms with life in this sphere. It was then explained to me that these newly arrived individuals needed our support, and that there are so many brothers and sisters in need of help. Accustomed as I had been during my life on earth to help and support others, I was now being encouraged to direct my help towards my brothers and sisters here in this world, too. I was also told about the ways in which such help could be given. At first I was really move of a spectator and didn't have much to do. My task was to carefully observe how my teachers dealt with those recently returned. Later, I was told, I would carry out this work on my own. I am going to tell you now about the experiences I had which made the biggest impression on me and which were the ones I treasure most. At the time I had no idea of what life in the heavenly realms was really like. In one's earthly life one simply doesn't give any thought to what is going to happen, or what could happen, to someone who has done wrong in one way or another. In religion, people talk a great deal about God's mercy, and His love, and certainly if one has lived a good life, one looks forward to experiencing this mercy and love in the world to come. But the fact is that most people have no real understanding of Christ's work of salvation. And so, one of the first things we have to do here, with respect to the work we are to carry out, is to learn about the plan of salvation. I was no exception. I ought to say that this particular instruction is not immediately given to everyone upon their return to the world of spirit. But because my willingness to continue to serve and help others was already known to those whose charge I was then in, I was given this responsibility. And so, let me now tell you a little about the work I was given to do. People on earth can be very cruel, especially during times of war. When they capture their enemies, as they call them, they take them prisoner and often confine them and torture them in order to get the information they want. This unfortunately happens very often. It can happen also that individuals who disagree with the actions of their governments become spies, but then later fall into the hands of their own people. Such things do indeed happen among you on earth. Woe betide those who get caught. They will meet a sorry end. Then there are also people who are imprisoned for their different views or their religious or other beliefs, who are tortured and eventually put to death. Many ways are found to bring charges of wrongdoing against them and then, once found guilty, they are very possibly sentenced to death. I won't go into the details here, but you know very well how cruel individuals can be from the events of the recent wars, if not from, the wars that are still being fought, even today. You can doubtless imagine the fear of those who are tortured and condemned to death, not knowing how they are going to be killed but knowing very well that they will be killed. The world of spirit does not abandon such individuals, nor does it turn away from those who have no faith. There are missionary spirits who take care of such people irrespective of whether they believe in God or not. The power of God's love ensures that each person will be given the support he or she needs and in the best possible way. You will understand, however, that individuals who do believe, and who do turn to God, will receive more support than those who do not. I was thus asked to join the ranks of the missionary spirits and give my help to the unfortunate individuals with whom they work. Missionary spirits have ways and means of comforting these tortured, frightened people. They have remedies of a spiritual kind at their disposal and use these best for those who have accepted their fate and put their trust in God. The missionary spirits will do their best to soothe these poor creatures, thus enabling them to face their end with fortitude. In such cases they employ a variety of spiritual means. Most people are incapable of sensing or seeing these things unless he or she is clairvoyant, clairaudient or clairsentient. For example, the missionary spirits will provide the suffering and oppressed with a drink made of spiritual substances. This drink contains a sedative capable of influencing the physical organism. At the same time it has ingredients which calm and strengthen the individual's soul. This drink is used quite often, both with individuals who have faith and with those who do not. An alternative method used to soothe people is the use of a balm applied to the face and rubbed in particularly over the forehead and upper lip. This, too, has a calming effect on the individual. In this way, and through the power of God's love, the missionary beings come to the help and support of those who are suffering, thus lightening their load. The efficacy of these remedies does, however, depend very much upon the attitude and state of mind of the people on whom they are used. Conditions for the success of the remedies are optimal when the individual has come to terms with and accepted his or her fate. In contrast, the remedies have little chance of success with individuals full of hate and struggling against their impending death. I include this for your own personal instruction. And so, in the beginning, I acted as support for those who were suffering, sometimes for people who had faith, sometimes for those who did not but who, as their final hour approached, would nonetheless voice the thought, "If there is a God, then please, oh please, take pity on me and forgive me for not having believed in you." There are many who have such thoughts in their final hours, but there are many still who express no belief in God at all. I must say, I found it is very satisfying experience to be able at that time to help people who did believe. I was allowed not only to give them the drink I spoke of, and to apply that special oil to their forehead and lips, but also to be present when the time came for them to open their spiritual eyes. I would stand there in front of them, still holding my container of spiritual substances, telling them that I had been with them in their last moments and had spoken words of courage to them, and had been able to take away some of their agitation. Their usual response was to stand there, staring at me through wide open eyes, scarcely understanding a word of what was said. They need time, having ended their earthly lives under such violent circumstances. Their return to the spiritual world is not an easy or straightforward matter. Certainly over the years you have received many accounts from our brothers and sisters in spirit telling you that each individual goes to a place in the spiritual world which corresponds to his or her own particular level of spiritual development. You will also have been told that some individuals are given warm, affectionate welcome whilst others are met with reproaches and criticism. It really all comes down to what a person has done with his or her life on earth. Let me now tell you about those who die believing in God and who, before they take the great step from earth into spirit, have been forced to undergo a period of physical torture. Many of these individuals are cared for together, as a group, for there are always many entering our world who do so under similar circumstances. Such individuals, even if they have lacked any belief in God, are received in such a way that criticism is always withheld, at least in the early stages. Let me tell you now what happens to those who die as believers. The latter are assembled in groups of between 20 and 30, and brought to a house which has a number of different rooms. First, they are taken into a room where they can sleep, for they are to start by having a complete rest. When, as part of my work, I stand before these individuals and tell them it was I who gave them strength and calmed their fears, they are barely able to understand what I am saying, for they are still astounded that there is life after death. We direct them into the house to sleep without much further explanation. We make rough calculations of the amount of rest each one needs, and when we judge that they have recovered from the worst of their trauma, they are woken individuality, if indeed they do not wake of their own accord. In the room where these poor souls sleep, there are always spirit guides or watchers present as well. Their task is to monitor those who are asleep. These guides or watchers go from one sleeper to the other, and as soon as they open their eyes, they are invited to get up and are taken to one of the other rooms. I shall not dwell further on what happens to those who undergo this period of sleep. There is really nothing more to say about them beyond what I have already told you. But let me take you now into one of these rooms where these individuals go, once they have woken, and where they are to be found full of questions and marveling at the fact that life continues. Before I go on, however, I must first describe the surroundings to you.